probably both.
Both. Wonderful.
Yes.
Great.
Okay. You're doing wonderful work.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You know, between you and me, her head's going to get so swollen.
Oh, I hope so.
Hello, now, this is Dotsy. I'm back, and I have 7:03, so I think we should probably get started here because I know Barb has a good 40 to 45 minutes that she wants to share with us. So I'd just like to welcome everyone to the call and just give you a little information about how this call will work, and then we'll get started. I would appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the 6 button on your phone so we can mute all background noises. And then at the end of the lecture, we'll have time for a few questions and answers. And at that time, I'll just simply ask you to hit 6 again, and we'll be able to hear you. And that'll open up the lines for a few questions. Okay?
Great.
So let's get started. For those of you who are guests of Barbara's, I am Dotsy Bregel, founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is www.nabbw.com. And also the number one site on all search engines for baby boomer women, which is www.boomerwomenspeak.com. I'm passionate about educating and empowering midlife women. Since launching Boomer Women Speak several years ago, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis. I feel like I have my finger on the pulse of this spirited generation, and I dedicate a great portion of my time creating opportunities that inspire women to explore their passions and live them to the fullest. So my prayer is to embrace all women and provide them with the means to soar. For those women who are on the call this evening and are not members of the association, if you want to email me at dots@boomerwomenspeak, I'll be glad to send you a link to join the association at a reduced rate. I have been mentioned in Time Magazine and AARP Bulletin among dozens of newspapers across the nation. I frequently do radio interviews and have been interviewed for many publications. I was invited to be in the outside audience with Dave Price on the early show in New York City, and I've also helped connect women for the NBC Nightly News. I live in Baltimore, Maryland with my husband and dog, and I used to have 3 children living here, but they're all in college. You can reach me at dots@boomerwomenspeak.com or 1-877-BE-BOOMER. Tonight we have Barbara Friesner, who's going to talk to us about elder care. And I just have to share on a personal note that I'm really interested in this topic because I'm currently being a part-time caregiver for an elderly family member, and this just occurred within the last 6 weeks, so the timing for this is perfect. Barbara is the country's leading generational coach and an expert on issues affecting seniors and their families. And this evening, she's going to give us about a 40-minute lecture. So this some of you have listened in on other calls, and sometimes I interview our experts, and other times they just give a lecture, and then we ask questions at the end. So the format for this evening is that Barb will give a lecture, so I ask that you just listen, and if you take notes about any questions you might have, and save them for the end. Some of you know Barbara as our elder care expert, where every month she shares valuable tips on elder care in her articles in the newsletter. And some of you may know about her from her highly regarded monthly newsletter. If you're not getting her newsletter, I highly recommend that you go to her website, which is www.agewiseliving.com, and that's agewiseliving.com, and sign up. In addition, Barbara is a regular contributor to the Children of Aging Parents quarterly newsletter. She's been published in several magazines and quoted in newspapers and magazines across the country. She started her company, AgeWise Living, about 6.5 years ago as the result of being the care manager for her grandmother for many years and then for the past 15 years for her mother, who has advanced dementia. So she is very familiar with the kind of elder care issues that baby boomer women are going through because she has lived through them herself. And I just like to mention here that this is so typical of second careers for baby boomer women. It seems like so many of us take something that's really near and dear to our hearts and find a way to make a living at it. And that's something that I see Barbara's done, and I just think it's really cool because then we know her heart's really in her work. Anyway, Barbara is also an adjunct professor at Cornell University, where she created and teaches senior housing management for Cornell's School of Hotel Administration. She received her MBA from Boston University, where she's also been a guest lecturer. Before starting AgeWise Living, Barbara spent 30 years in the hotel industry, and she started as a maid at a resort on Martha's Vineyard, became a sales secretary, and then sales manager at Sheraton Palace Hotel in San Francisco, and then the Western Regional Sales Manager for Hyatt Hotels, and eventually became a hotel general manager. For 11 years, she had her own consulting company and helped open 37 hotels, 7 freestanding restaurants, 2 casinos, and a cruise ship. For the 10 years prior to starting AgeWise Living, Barbara was the Director of Education and Development for the Lowe's Corporation and Dean of Lowe's University. You can learn lots more about her and her generational coaching by going to her website, again, www.agewiseliving.com. And again, I urge you to sign up for her newsletter. There's lots of valuable and relevant information shared monthly. In addition to elder care issues, Barbara is an avid knitter, hiker, and cross-country skier. She is also on the board of the East Side Council on the Aging in New York City, and that's the board of the League of Women, and also the board of the League of Women Voters in New York City, and her co-op board. So tonight, Barbara will share with us the top 3 causes of resistance and conflict between baby boomer women and their parents. And she will also share with us some of the secrets that have allowed hundreds of her generational coaching clients to successfully overcome their elder care issues. And again, I can't tell you how timely this is for me. I know I'm going to be taking notes. So anyway, this is an important topic because so many baby boomer women are struggling not just with knowing what to do, but also how to get their aging loved ones to actually do what's in their best interest. So Barbara, I welcome you to the call. And I don't know if you have anything else to share before you get started, but if so, now's the time.
No, I think that I'm just going to go ahead and jump in, and I think that, and thank you, Dotsie. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you to everybody who is joining us tonight. It's so interesting that you're saying that this is a topic that's important to you because you are now facing it, and that is something that so many baby boomer women are, they either currently caregivers for aging parents or they see that in their future. And it's such an important topic because it's one that we never really were trained for. And there's so much written about child care, but elder care is something that there's just not a lot out there about. So I'm delighted to be here tonight. And as I said, and as Dotsie said, this is an important topic because more and more baby boomers are caregivers, and they want to make sure that their parents and other aging loved ones are safe and happy within today's reality. Now, what do I mean by today's reality? Well, until this generation, until the baby boomer generation, for our parents' generation, homes were multi-generational homes, and very few people worked outside of the home. And very few women worked outside of the home. And a woman's job was to be the homemaker and the mother and the caregiver for all of the elderly relatives, whether they lived in their house or in the close by in the neighborhood.
Okay, Barbara, can I interrupt just 1 second, and I apologize, but can I ask you to just speak up a little bit because I just want to make sure that we can hear you loud and clear on the recording.
Absolutely. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, and I will definitely talk up too.
Okay, good.
Okay. And if I get quieter again, then please say something.
Okay.
I'm rarely quiet.
So. Okay.
So I won't know. Anyway, after World War II, in our parents' world, they were very much the homemakers and mothers and stayed at home. But after World War II, all of that changed. And that's the world that us baby boomers were born into. And now as our parents age, we're trying to do our daughterly duty and be good daughters and help our parents do what's in their best interest, while at the same time holding down full-time jobs and caring for our own families, and in many cases while still taking care of young kids. That's a, you just, your kids are now off at college, but until, you know, recently you were taking care of young kids too. And what makes it even more difficult is that for many they were doing it from a distance. It's definitely not an easy thing to do. And the title of tonight's program is All I'm Trying to Do is Help. And I think that really reflects the frustration many baby boomers feel as we try to help our parents do what's in their best interest. But it can be especially frustrating when we try to help only to run into resistance and emotional outbursts or walls of silence. You know, we're just trying to help. Unfortunately, when we do run into resistance at that point, many family members just stop trying until there's a crisis. And if they stop trying and there is a crisis, then it's really a mess. Because at that point, there are fewer options. There's wasted time when they're now dealing with a crisis rather than dealing with all of the other things that they could be doing. It often means that they have more difficult relationships. There's a lot more guilt and a lot more stress. Now, there have been issues between daughters and their parents since the beginning of time, and we're not going to resolve all of those tonight. Would that we could, but we're not. So in the limited time we have tonight, I'm going to focus on the top three causes of resistance and conflict between baby boomer women and their parents as it very specifically relates to helping their aging loved ones do what is in their best interest. And then I'm going to share with you the number one secret that's allowed hundreds of my clients to successfully resolve their critical elder care issues by choice and not by crisis. Now, as Dotsie said, for many, the struggle is knowing what to do. However, just knowing what to do does not mean that your parents will willingly do what needs to be done. And I know that many people run into that. They say, but it's so obvious, it's so logical what we're suggesting that they do, what we think that they ought to do. But just because we know what they should do does not mean that they will willingly do it. So what are the top three causes of resistance and conflict? Well, they are, number three, thinking our parents think the way we do and therefore that we know what they think. I mean, they are, after all, our parents. They raised us, so obviously we think the same way, right? Or we think that this is what most people think. This is what our friends think. This is what we read on here on television or we read in magazines. So therefore, this must be what my parents think. And therefore, that their reason, our parents' reason for doing something or not doing something is just the same as ours. And that if we just explain long enough or hard enough or often enough, they'll see it our way. And that creates a problem because that really is not true. Let me give you an example. My mother, who has very advanced dementia, she's now in a nursing home and sadly no longer even remembers who I am. I don't think she even remembers anymore what the concept of daughter is. But at the point when she was, things were getting much more obvious, the dementia was getting much more obvious, it was clear that she could no longer drive. And so it was necessary to take away her car. And we disabled the car, and that was fine. We had moved her into an assisted living at that point. We had disabled the car, and it was sitting in the parking lot, and everything was fine. And it sat there for a year. And finally, the assisted living community said, you know, it's been a year, and we really do need to have you move the car. It hasn't moved, and we'd like to be able to, you know, shovel underneath it and sweep underneath it and get the car out of there. So we said, fine, and since my mother had no problems with not driving, we thought that was fine. So we arranged to have the car donated to charity, and they came and took the car, and she took pictures as they hauled the car away. And then she went absolutely nuts that the car was not there. And she called the police that we had stolen the car and where was her car and what had happened to it, and she was very angry. And one of the things that we were told and that read and that we had heard and, you know, all of those that we thought knew the answer told us was that it was the loss of her independence and the loss of her freedom and the loss of her control over her life and her ability to go places. And so all of the approaches that we tried were based on that. What I came to discover through a lot over a long period of time, what I came to discover was that it had nothing to do with her independence or her control over her life or her ability to go anywhere, because she had been perfectly happy not going anywhere. What was important to her was the fact that she had a car and other people in the assisted living community did not. And that somehow gave her status. And even though she didn't drive the car, it was important to her to have the car. And so had we thought the way she was thinking, we might have approached it, probably would have approached it differently. But that's an example of thinking that they think the way we do, or they think the way everybody, you know, this is what everyone says she's thinking. Well, it's not what it is. And it created huge conflict, because what we were addressing when we were trying to get her to accept it was not what the issue was to begin with. So the third of the three reasons of resistance and conflict are thinking our parents think the way we do, and that therefore that we know what they think. The second one is that there is only one right answer, and it makes perfect sense to us, and if we just explain it long enough and hard enough and often enough, they'll see it our way. For example, things like moving into an assisted living versus having an in-home health attendant. That there's a right answer. No, it's time for them to move into assisted living, or it's time for this, you know, for the car to go, or whatever. And if the answer makes perfect sense to us, it's just a matter of explaining it well enough, and they will understand. That's not the way it works. And the number one reason for conflict and resistance between baby boomers and their parents is, drum roll please, the number one reason is thinking that we can make anyone want to do something. Thinking that we can make anyone want to do anything. And that if we just explain long enough and hard enough and often enough, they'll see the wisdom of our way and want to do it. And the fact is that no one can make anyone wants to do anything. Now, Dottie mentioned that she has kids, and I'm sure you've seen that you can make them do things, but you can't necessarily make them want to do things, like clean their room. Would that be a safe thing to say?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you can make kids do something, but you can't necessarily make them want to do things, but you can't even make your parents do things because they're not children, and you can't punish them or threaten them or whatever. So you can't make anyone want to do anything. Now, before I proceed, I do want to mention that what we're talking about here, I'm going on several assumptions. One is that when you're dealing with a loved one, that it's not a crisis. Because although the concepts are the same, it's more complicated. So what we're going to talk about is in a situation where it's not a crisis. And second, that we're going to assume that your loved one does not have dementia, which really changes the approach dramatically if they have dementia. But we're going to assume that they don't have it. But given that, as we all know, just because something is good for us doesn't mean that we'll do it, and it certainly doesn't guarantee that we'll do it willingly. Now, it's also true that most people don't like change and will endure years of being unhappy just to avoid it. For example, we all know that going to the dentist every 6 months is good, but it probably doesn't mean people will do it. I know that I don't do it, so knowing that something is good for us doesn't mean that we will do it. So when do we willingly change? Well, we willingly change when the change provides what we want and or what we need better than what we already have. Let me say that again. We willingly change when the change provides what we want or what we need better than what we already have. So who's to say what is better? Well, that can only come from the person, him or herself. For someone to change, they have to want it. They have to be the one who wants it. And what I think someone should do doesn't really matter. What matters is what the other person thinks that he or she should do, even if they're the same thing. So what we're going to talk about, the secret to the success of all this, is not thinking of it as a way to convince your parents or other aging loved ones, not for us to convince them, but as a way to get them to discover their own reasons so they can convince themselves. So the challenge is finding their motivator. And how do you help them discover their motivator? Well, you ask them. But you can't just say, what do you want, because you won't get any further along than you already are, because they probably don't know what they want. Or they know that they just don't want anything to be different. They don't want any change. And so they have to discover how and why change will be better for them. Now, how to get them, if you can't just say to them, what do you want, then how do you get them to discover what it is that they do want? The secret for helping them willingly do what's in their best interest is by asking them to do a fun exercise. And this exercise is what I call what I want for the third half of my life. Now, this is not a to-do list. The point of this exercise is to help them determine the fundamental essence of what they want. The fundamental essence of what they want. Now, this sounds very deep and very psychological and, you know, all, you know, strange and weird, but it's not. Basically, it's a sheet of paper with lines, and it comes with instructions. Now, to get this sheet of paper with lines and all of the instructions, called What I Want for the Third Half of My Life, you can download a copy of the form and the instructions by going to the newsletter page of my website, which is www.agewiseliving.com, and clicking the button at the top of the page that says, What Do I Want for the Third Half? Once you do that, give the form to your parent or aging loved one and ask them to think about and write down what they want or have always wanted or dreamed of for the third half of their life. And the idea is for them to let their mind go and be creative and honest, and for them to remember that there are no right or wrong answers. And again, it's not a to-do list. And also it's important that they don't censor themselves or be concerned with what's practical or what's right or what others will think, but really for them to just sit down and write what they want for the third half of their life. And when I said that it's important not to have them censor themselves or be concerned with what's practical or right, let me give you an example. Had a client who used did this exercise with her mother, and the mother wrote down that she wanted her husband to be alive, and he had passed a couple of years earlier. And the mother just could not get past that. She didn't want to write anything down. She just said, I want your father to be alive. And my client did not know what to do. And I told her to have her mother write that down. Go ahead and write that down, and then ask her mother about what was it that about having her father alive that she wanted. And of course, we assumed that she was going to say that he had been the love of her life, which he had been, and that she really missed him. And here was one of those assumptions that one of the causes, which is assuming that we know what they're thinking. And but when we asked, when the daughter asked the mother about what it was about having the father alive and what was it she wanted, the mother said she wanted the father alive so she could kill him herself. and nothing sinister, fortunately, there was nothing sinister in it. But for the first time, she was able to express the fact that she was angry with her husband because he left first and he left her alone. And once she was able to express that to her daughter, all they had a good laugh, they had a good cry, but once they were past this, she was then able to write down all of the things that she and her husband had talked about doing and all of the things that she'd always wanted to do as a child. So sometimes just writing the thing down and not censoring yourself about what other people are going to think is the most powerful thing. So they got over that. Once she got past that, she was able to now really get past it and start really thinking about what she wanted for the third half of her life. However, in addition, when you're having them do it, write this list, they should be specific to the extent that it's something tangible. For example, many times they'll write down that they want to have an active life. So then ask them to describe what an active life means to them personally. They might say that they want to travel or do volunteer work or, you know, learn to cook or garden or go back to school or teach school or read a book a day or sleep all day and watch TV all night, which is what the father of one of my clients said. And he ended up doing that exact thing. And all of those are great, but they don't have to be that specific. And having said that, they shouldn't worry about how or when. For example, if they put down that they want to go back to school and get a degree, it's certainly not necessary for them to indicate where they want to go to school or what they want to learn, but really just to write it down that they want to have an advanced degree, they want to have a law degree, because you really never know what will come from that. For example, if they say they want a law degree, the question then can be, and what would you do with the law degree? What would it afford you? What would you then be able to do with it? And then they can start really opening their mind and be more creative. And that's really an important thing, that this exercise is intended to be fun and not an assignment. It's really important to encourage them to forget about the practical considerations such as their health or their money or their responsibilities and to really think outrageously. One client's mother put down that she'd always wanted to learn to belly dance, and her mother had been bedridden for years, and she wrote on her list that's what she'd always wanted to do. Had another client's mother who wrote down that she was 92 years old, and she wrote down that she'd always wanted to learn how to tap dance. And in fact, at the age of 92, she did in fact learn how to tap dance. And it wasn't quite the tap dancing that you see on Broadway, but it was she and several other women at the assisted living community learned how to tap dance. They were sitting down on the chair and they did this whole exercise. So it really is it's something that to be very creative and to forget all of the bounds of earth, so to speak. Now, if you do give the list to them, my recommendation is that you work together on the list only to get them started, because once the ball gets rolling, you really want them to work on their list alone and to give them as much time as they need, because it takes time for them to really think about what they want and to be creative. And then, once the worksheet is completed, then you have the raw data as to what your aging loved one truly wants, or the essence of what they want, and that's what you can now work with. Let me give you another example, and this was a client just recently. The parents were the family members were very concerned. He was very depressed, and they were also concerned. He was in his 80s, and he was completely healthy, but he just didn't know what he wanted to do, and he was getting more and more depressed. And they were very concerned about him, and they were also concerned about him living alone. And I had them do this exercise with their father, and one of the things that he said was that he really wanted to go back to work. And initially the kids were sort of arguing with him, and I said to them, don't argue with him. It's not about whether he's really going to go to work or not, but ask him what it is about work that he missed. And And then he started talking about how he missed having a scheduled place to be. He missed having an expectation of getting up and going somewhere every day. And he missed in his job, he had been the head of sales, and that he missed helping new salespeople get, you know, go out on their sales calls and get better. And he really had always enjoyed creating new market plans and going after new markets and helping his employees go after new markets. I have to apologize for the noise. Are you hearing sirens?
Yes, just a little bit.
Yeah, well, we're in Manhattan, in New York City, and there seems to be fire engines going by, so I really do apologize.
Well, that's okay.
And I'm not sure what the static is about either. Okay, that's... Sorry.
That's okay. I hope nothing serious is going on there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there isn't. I'm on a main street, but it just gets noisy when you want it to be quiet.
Sure.
But anyway, so the client's father wrote that what he missed was having a place to be and helping the salespeople and helping them find new markets and going out on the sales calls. And as a result of what he wrote, once he finally really realized what the essence was of what he missed and what he loved to do and what he wanted to do with the third half of his life, he now volunteers for the Small Business Administration.
Mm, great.
And so he's very happy, and he's not depressed anymore, which is the family is thrilled about. And he, within a short period of time, I mean, he loved it so much he threw himself into it and eventually got too busy to cook and clean and has since moved into an assisted living community so he doesn't have to cook and clean, which was also exactly what the family had wanted all along, too. But the difference here is that it's what he discovered. When he discovered the essence of what it was that he wanted to do, the tiny piece that was that made him happy, suddenly all of the rest of it fell in place. And so the family members, that this is what they wanted all along, but they couldn't convince him until he discovered it for himself. And that's really the point of all of this. And this seems like a very simple exercise, but it really is more difficult than you would think. And ever since I put this exercise together, I've been trying to think of one for myself to write my own list of what I want for the third half of my life. I'm not there yet, and I probably have another 20 years before I am. But figured, you know, I should do this exercise for myself, and I recommend that others do this exercise too. And what I discovered when I was doing it myself is it was very hard because I too was falling into the trap of trying to figure out very specifically what I wanted. And then finally I stepped back and I said to myself, well, what is it that I enjoy? What is the essence of what I enjoy? Well, I enjoy having a sense of accomplishment. I'm very task-oriented, so I like to do things where I can see the fruits of my labor, a very tangible result. I love doing holiday cards because I love having a big stack of cards here and envelopes and stamps and return address labels and work really hard and then finally, you have a pile of them all put together, and it's a real sense of accomplishment. I really do love to do that. And once I realized that it's this sense of accomplishment that I enjoy, and then I was thinking, well, and I love crafts, okay, and I'm a great knitter. Does that mean I'm going to knit the rest of my life? Maybe. But maybe I'll learn to weave and do blankets for the poor or, you know, take a loom to the top of a mountain and weave for the rest of my life. I don't know. But what I finally discovered was it was the essence of what it was that I wanted. I love to see this sense of accomplishment, and I love to see helping other people and to do the craft, and how can I put all that together. So that's an example of somebody who I still have a long way to go, but it really is something. It's a great exercise that I recommend all of you try as well, even if, even as you're doing it with your loved one, because it really gives you quite a sense of, you know, really, it gives you a real focus on what it is that you want to do. So I see that we are almost out of time. So what I want to do is say a couple of things in summary and then take your questions. And a couple of things. One is that this is a process that takes time. When you're dealing with aging loved ones and trying to help them do what is in their best interest, this is a very difficult time for them. It's a very emotional time, and all of it can't be resolved in one conversation. It really has to happen over time. And this exercise, it happens over time because they really need to think about it. So you need to prepare for it to take some time. The second is that the answer may well be obvious, and they may come to your conclusion, but they have to discover it for themselves. And because many feel that they're losing control over their own lives, it's important to emphasize that you're not trying to control them. You just want to help them discover what they want. And also, it's important to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, and know when to walk away. Because unless there's dementia, they really have free will and choice. So this is something where it's a process that happens over time. And you really need to know how many conversations to have, and at what point do you stop and say, you know what, it's time for us to take a break from this and to come back to it another time, because sometimes they're just not ready for it yet. And finally, I really encourage you to do this exercise for yourself, because it may help them do theirs, and I think you'll really be very interested in the results. So with that, Dotsie and callers, I turn it over to you, and if anybody has any questions.
Okay, sure. Barbara, I'm going to ask a couple questions, and then anyone else who wants to ask a question can at that time push 6 and ask a question of Barbara.
Okay.
I think one of the things that I was getting from what you had to say is that basically our aging parents need to find a purpose. And it just really kind of dawned on me while you were talking that is probably the issue that our, you know, aging family member that we're helping care for is having a problem with, because right now I think he feels without purpose. And this is a man who is, you know, well accomplished and is at a point in his life where he really isn't doing anything except thinking about himself and worrying about his future. So, you know, through this little project, you know, that I can print and use with him, hopefully we can find out what, you know, what his purpose is and what would make him feel like he's still giving to society, because I think that's important. And so, you know, I appreciate you pointing that out to me.
I think that is very important. And the difficult thing is that a lot of times people just simply don't know.
Right.
And they don't know how to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all kinds of very well-meaning people will give them suggestions. How about doing this? Or how about doing that? Or how about doing the other thing? And it's like, well, and until it's that essence of it and they find something that they discover that just that tiny little seed that goes in their head and they go, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I do have a question for you. Like, you mentioned that you can't really change the way they think, but in doing say for instance you're at a point where someone needs to go into a retirement community or have round the clock care or something like that.
Well,
but the person is, yes, go ahead.
Let me just say, you can't make them change the way they think.
Right.
They have to want to change the way they think.
And it's just a process, I think, of educating them and getting them around to that point where they think it for themselves. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay, because you know, say you do this worksheet, and our point would be, to get the person to realize that they can't be alone anymore. So, I mean, after they go through this process and they sort things through and they realize, you know, what they can do to, you know, feel like they have a purpose again, and then could we say, well, is this the kind, can you do this from your home, or do you need to do this in a you know, community where you have support or something? I mean,
well,
is that a step? Because it just seems like this person probably isn't capable of doing this in the home anymore unless they have someone with them all the time.
Well, you need to sort of focus the evaluation on how to say this. If they find what it is that they want to do in life, that may not necessarily get them to agree to a move to an assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
But what might get them to move to the assisted living is if they talk about what they want for the third half of their life. It includes being safe,
mm-hmm.
and being healthy,
mm-hmm.
and being around other people that have the same enthusiasm and same interests.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so then you're able to say, then you're able to point to those things and say that's the sort of thing you can do at an assisted living.
Right, and that maybe you could, you know, fulfill this mission better in an assisted or a retirement community or with a companion here with you all the time or something like that.
Because that addressed their own desire,
mm-hmm.
to be safe,
mm-hmm.
and to be healthy.
Right, which is something they have to come around to, I think.
Yeah.
Well, another thing I just wanted to ask is, what about the difference in generational thinking? For instance, you know, our parents' generation, you know, lived through the Depression, and they worked very hard for their, you know, their retirement, and they hate to just throw it away on care. And, you know, we come from a practical standpoint, well, at least you have the money, and let's just use it to take care of yourself. And they're coming from the perspective of all of the hard, the years and years of hard work to accumulate this, and really had hoped to leave it to the children, you know, and that type of thing. Doesn't that, some of that come from that whole difference in generation? Can you speak to that at all?
Yes, and that's a huge, I did not mention the generational issue because it's such a big one, but you're absolutely right. But it's not only the fact that they went through the Depression and they don't want to spend their money. It also goes even further back to the fact that they, in fact, come from the Victorian era. They were born at the end of the Victorian era.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about people at the end of the Victorian era, the men were the people who went out and were the breadwinners, mm-hmm. and they brought the money home and they managed the money, and the women were the caregivers and the mothers, and they took care of the house, and that is the expectation that they have of their children, of their daughters, not their sons, but of their daughters. They expect the daughters to take care of them. So part of it is the Depression era and the money issue, that they don't want to spend the money, they don't want to outlive their money, and that used to be sort of a funny thought, but nowadays people really are outliving their money, so
mm-hmm.
it's not so, you know, such a strange thing for them to say. But it also, in the back of their mind, there's a certain expectation that they shouldn't have to spend their money because their daughters, this is what their daughters are supposed to do. Their daughters are supposed to take care of them. So there's that element in there as well.
Right. And, you know, I would have to say that really, you know, a whole lot hasn't changed. I mean, we're still taking care of our families. And I think that, you know, in America, the majority of children do want to take care of their parents, and especially the women. But the thing that has changed the most is that, you know, now we're working full time.
Exactly.
And before, you know, say if our mothers took care of their parents, like our grandparents or even the generation before, that's what they were doing. and they were consumed with that, and they weren't working outside the home. So it's just, I'll tell you, it's tough. It's really tough.
It's very tough, and that's when we're talking about the sandwich generation, which, again, is a whole other, you know, huge topic.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about that, it is very difficult, and we're just not in a position to do that.
Right.
And we now have the assisted living communities and nursing homes and senior facilities, but the parents don't want to spend that kind of money because they not only do they want to pass it along, but they also just don't want to they don't want to part with it.
Right. Okay, well, let's see. Is anyone else on that would like to ask a question of Barbara? And if so, and if you've muted your phone, you need to push 6 so we can hear you. And if you didn't mute your phone, well, then go ahead and speak.
Dot, this is Nancy. I'd like to ask a question of Barbara, if I could.
Sure, go ahead, Nancy.
Okay. Barbara, I know that communication is a key thing in every generation, but you being in the industry, can you look in your crystal ball, and do you see any trends that might help us, help our children care for us in the future? Are there anything that you can see down the line or what might be occurring now that could help our children care for us when our time comes?
Yes, and I think that it's an interesting question because we have faith. I think baby boomers are the pivot where everything is changing because our parents didn't talk about a lot of things with us. They didn't talk about money. They didn't talk about wills and trusts and, you know, health and all those kinds of things. And, again, that comes from the Victorian upbringing. You just didn't talk about those kinds of things with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference with baby boomers is that we do talk about it. And the most important thing to help your children is to talk with them and to say, this is what I want. This is what I've prepared. You know, I have a living will, and if you don't have living wills and healthcare proxies, and then I strongly recommend that you do get those. But talk to your family about them and say, this is what I want, and this is the money that I've put away, whether it's in the bank or whether it's long-term care insurance or whatever it is that you do. But this is what I've prepared, and this is what I want. And this is how I want to be taken care of, because most of the time, I think one of the things that makes it so difficult for baby boomers these days is that we really don't know what our parents want. And our parents don't know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're able to say to our kids, this is what I want. And again, that's part of why this exercise is so great. You know, it's Barbara's always liked X, so we're going to put her in a place where she gets to do X all day long. Well, that's not necessarily what I want to do. Well, then you got to tell them, this is what I'd like to have. I'd like to be in a community that's very artistic. I want to be in a community where it's close to a college or university so I can continue to do that. I want to, you know, so it's really, really important to really talk with our kids, with your kids, and tell them what you'd like to have happen, because I think most of the time they'd be more than happy to do whatever you want,
sure,
so long as you tell them.
Thank you, Barbara.
And Barbara, one thing you mentioned there that is something I think that we should be doing for our children, and that's long-term care insurance. When do we buy that?
Well, I don't sell it, so
right.
but I think most people do, from what I am told, most people do when they turn about 50.
Okay.
But you certainly, I think it's something to look at earlier. The earlier you buy it, the less expensive it turns out to be.
Okay.
But I really think, I mean, I know I have it, and I wish that we had had it for my mother.
Yeah, see, we don't have it, and our loved one doesn't have it right now either. And so this is something that, you know, it's kind of been a red flag to us. Oops, let's look into that. But, you know, another thing that is interesting, and you talk about how the boomers have been the pivot, there I read a lot of articles about baby boomers, and there are companies, builders, who are studying our generation and planning what our retirement communities are going to look like. And one of the things that I've read that one person's come upon is the idea of communal living, kind of going back to the way it was in the 60s, which I think is interesting. And I have to say, I still get together with some friends that I've known since first grade, and we say we're all going to get in this house. We're either going to go to the same retirement community, or we're going to get a house and all live there and take care of one another. And this is, you know, something that came up in one of these articles that I've read. And one of the reasons is because our children are no longer in the same state. I mean, we're finding that now. If you look in the obituaries now, you'll see, you know, when you read about the families, they're scattered all over the place. And our generation, our children, are going to be even scattered more because more and more, you know, people are moving for careers. And so, you know, the children aren't necessarily going to even be in the same state.
And that's very true. And again, that started our parents after World War II moved out of their centrally located family community where most of the people, most of our parents' generation continue even today. I think it's something like 90% of our parents' generation live within 50 miles of where they were born. And but after World War II, many of them moved perhaps only 50 miles away, but moved to the suburbs. And things started to, you know, the close-knit community started to really spread out. And, you know, and now our kids and our kids and our kids' kids and, you know, further down the line. What I think is really funny is you're talking about this kind of communal living because I've had the same conversation with friends of mine where we've had that conversation. We said, oh, well, I'll just get a great big house and we'll all live together and, you know, we'll do all kinds of strange things and won't it be fun? And I thought we were the only ones who thought that way. So maybe that is the wave of the future.
Yeah, well, when I read about it in that article, I thought, oh, my gosh, we're right on here, you know.
Yeah, a little trendsetter
so,
you.
Yeah. So does anyone else have a question for Barbara?
Oh, yes, definitely. Phyllis from Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I agree about the long-term care insurance, but just shop around. There are so many different variations. My husband and I do have it, and it's amazing how many people are wrapped up with caring for their parents. They don't look at what happens when they get in that situation. I've got clients that I'm an organizer that have me come in because they can't talk to each other. And they end up fighting because the daughter knows what mom wants, and mom says no. And so sometimes just bringing somebody in as an outsider, even if it's just for the 4 hours to get things moving, really works. And there's just so much there that I agree with almost everything you say, Barb. And it's amazing how many people, even at the supermarket, don't understand the difference between an attorney and an elder attorney. But the thing that I am just dumbfounded about, and I don't have an answer to, I have an answer for a lot of things, but this isn't one of them. There are people that, sons and daughters, that are being really worn out doing the things for their parents. Their parent wants to stay at home, is capable most of the time staying at home, but still wants their kids to do their shopping, wants the kids to do the cleaning, you know, the running around. And even though I'm able to tell them what services are available, mom or dad say, we don't want strangers in the house. We will not have them in the house. And, of course, it puts that, you know, adult child in a burden. You know, they can't just say, all right, I'm not going to do this for you. But at the same time, there, it would be a lot easier if their parent would say, yes, that's okay, I'll let that person in. What's the answer? What's the word of wisdom?
Well, again, it's a matter of helping the parents determine what it is that they want. And without, you know, there has to be a lot of other details that surround it in order to give you a better answer. But a lot of times it's a matter of, as they determine what they want, one of the things that they say is they want to have a good relationship with their kids. And what happens with the daughter, and 99% of the time it is the daughter, at least 85% of the time it is the daughter, what happens is they're so busy taking care of responsibilities that they're not having the relationship that they want to have. So part of it is to help them to see that by getting someone in to help with the responsibility aspect of their care, you know, the cooking and the cleaning and the errands, the things that you can easily give to somebody else, that would free up time for you to have the relationship with the daughter because she wouldn't be so busy taking care of these other things. So,
yeah, I understand that aspect, and I do explain to the child, adult child, about that. It's just like my husband does not like strangers in the house. He feels that the security of the house just isn't there when a stranger is in. And I have suggested that why don't you start off with hiring somebody just to do your shopping. And they can just come in, drop off the food, say hello, how are you doing? And maybe eventually they wouldn't be a stranger. Well, the adult child says, nope, that doesn't work. I've tried it. And for security reasons, they will not have somebody else in. Is there an answer to that?
Could I interject here?
Sure.
This is Chloe.
Oh, hi, Chloe.
Yes. I think that it's a question of allowing choices and, you know, to sit down with the person and say, I want to be able to help you as much as I can, and this is my schedule, and I want you to be satisfied with what's going on in your life. And have that person interview several people, you know, a lengthy interview to get an idea of, that person doesn't have to be a stranger. You know, it might even be someone in the neighborhood who needs some extra money, you know, to make some extra money. It doesn't have to be a total stranger, but to allow that person to make the decision as to who would be coming into the house. I had a situation recently with a friend of mine who's essentially a caregiver for her mother who lives alone, but, you know, the daughter does an awful lot for her. And they eventually resolved this issue. And it's a question of choices. You know, this is what you would like to do based on what you said, Barbara, you know, what some of the desires that they may have. And I'd like to see to it that you can do some of these things. And in order to facilitate that, here are some options. You know, empowering that person. Your opinion is very important to me. I think it's so important to say that, especially to an elderly person, and repeat it often. Your opinion counts, and I want you to feel satisfied. Now, let's investigate some options that you might have and what looks good to you. That might, you know, that might work in some cases. I won't say it works would work in all cases, but, you know, even with my mother who suffered from severe dementia, I never stopped giving her choices right up to the end. She was in a long-term care facility, but very simple things. You know, would you like this or would you like that? Both of them being perfectly okay, you know, and let her make the decision. And she was as happy as can be, you know, knowing that she had the decision-making power over certain things. And it's like with a little child. You can give them choices, and knowing both of them are perfectly acceptable. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and Barbara, I just want to tell you that I'll be quoting you on Saturday. I have a big conference on Saturday in North Carolina, and I will certainly be talking about this little that you have on your website, and I'll refer the audience to that. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, and let me just tell you, Chloe, this is Chloe John Paul, who is a member of the association, and she's written a book called What Happens Next, and it's a family guide to nursing home visits and more. And it's a great little book. It's pretty small, but it is just chock full of great advice for like visiting a loved one and, you know, what to do, where to go, what to do when you sit with them. And it, there's just lots of wonderful advice, so I highly recommend that book.
Yes, well, thank you, Dotsie.
You're welcome.
I didn't expect that, but that's wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Chloe?
Yeah. Yes.
This is Phyllis Slater.
Oh, hey, Phyllis. How are you?
Yeah, I have your book, and I have I have things, you know, that you've said in my book, and of course I have a link where I mention how they can get hold of you for the book. But the one thing that you said that I really, really like is getting to their neighborhood church that they're active in and asking if there's anybody part of that church that could be the caregiver, the one that fills in, because, as I said, I know, you know, what products are available, what services are available, but when you have somebody that doesn't want strangers in the house, it is very difficult, and I like your idea.
Yeah,
I think that's a marvelous idea.
I think it works. I really do. Okay.
Okay, good. We can take one more question because we're running over. So is there, and does anybody have one more question? Okay, I think then that we will call it a night. Again, if there's anyone on the phone that is not a member of the association and would like to join, please email me at dots@boomerwomenspeak, and I will send you a link to join for the discounted rate. And also be certain to visit Barb's site, agewiseliving.com, and sign up for her newsletter. And unless anybody else has anything else to say, I just want to say thanks for being on the call. Encourage other members to listen in at a later time, and we'll be sending the link around tomorrow or Thursday for everyone to refer to in the future. And it'll be on the members-only page at www.nabbw.com.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
All right, Barb, thank you, because I like that idea of that form to fill out. I think that is very practical and very wise, and thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we're going to use it too. So thank you very much, and it was very informative, and I appreciate your time, Barb. You did a great job.
Well, I appreciate you being here tonight, and I enjoyed it. So thank you, Dotsie, for making this happen.
You're welcome. Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.